Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. The world around us has been coming to life with an explosion of color. Trees are close to full leaf, flowers are popping, lawns are greening nicely. It's the time of year we begin getting our lawn and gardening acts together, and questions about what we need to do and when need some answers. We can provide a lot of those answers on today's program. I'm Don Marsh. We have two horticultural experts from the Missouri Botanical Garden to take your questions. June Hudson is consultant and designer at the Gardens Kemper Center for Home Gardening. She is joined by her garden colleague, Elizabeth Spiegel. Ladies, so nice to have you with us once again.
Nice to be here, Don. Thank you.
Nice to be here.
It must be spring. A sign of spring is when you two show up. Good to have you with us. June, let me begin with you. I think everybody is wondering what the awful winter that we had means for planting this season.
Well, it's done its damage, that's for sure, and we continue to have to monitor things to see if they're really alive or dead. It's that critical. And so we fear that some things are, you know, really been injured, and at best you'll have to cut them down to the ground and hope they come back from the base. But other things seem, you know, unscathed, but it's a lot of dead wood out there on everything.
Elizabeth, you said just before we went on the air, you bet when people call today, a lot of them will have pruning questions. I guess that's why.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You have to start cutting things back down to where they haven't been damaged at this point in the spring.
You know, most people, when they think of pruning, are thinking about pruning trees. But you're talking about more than that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Bushes and shrubs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Are there tricks to that in determining where to cut and how far to cut and what branches to cut?
It's an art, really. And it's not that it's impossible to learn, certainly not. But this year is completely different. It's not typical. Most of the time I just tell people right now to wait. Don't jump the gun, because when you scratch on the bark, you have to see where it's green, and that's where the life is. But it's tedious. And things are still showing up as being dead that we thought pretty much were still alive. So in that case, you just keep scratching, and where the green ends, that's where it's dead, and then you can cut right there.
What about the planting of new things? How has that been slowed by the cold winter? Elizabeth?
I don't think that things have been slowed too much. Really, after we warmed up, we haven't had too much late frost or anything like that to slow us down. So now that we're warm, I think we're really getting rolling.
Yeah, but it is a late start for most people.
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, excuse me, for one thing, because it remained cool for so long, you weren't thinking it was the right time, you know, even if it by the date it was.
You know, what should first-time gardeners be thinking? I mean, a lot of folks out there are anxious to put on the gloves and get going. What should they be thinking about, and what do they need to know? Complete neophytes.
Well, I think one thing that, you know, it kind of slows the process down, but certainly is one of the most important things that someone can do, especially if you're a novice, is to have your soil tested. And that way you can tell what nutrients you have, what you need. And the science has really come a long way, and the response you get from the soil test is easily understood, and the amounts you're supposed to apply are right on the test, so you don't have to be a soil scientist to figure it out. And I think if people paid attention to that, they would have a definite head start over those that don't.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because we have an email already from Bill in Sunset Hills. He said, I'd like to get my soil analyzed, but where can I take it?
Oh, you can bring it down to the garden. Uh-huh. Yeah, 2 cups in a paper bag, and they'll send it off to the lab, and then your results will be mailed back to you.
How long does that normally take?
Couple weeks. Right now it might be a little longer if they get backed up because they have so many samples, but it's about a couple weeks. So you need to, I guess, get a hurry on and get that done so you can get out in the garden.
Elizabeth, what sort of tools should the new gardener have close at hand?
Oh, I think that a trowel, we use a soil knife at the garden usually, but a trowel is definitely necessary. And then the next tool that I keep in my by my side all the time is my pruners.
And this year you'll have to have them plenty sharp and ready to go.
Ready to go.
Visiting the nursery. I guess people want a garden, but they don't know exactly what to do. What kinds of questions should they have when they go to the nursery and start thinking about things to plant?
Well, you should definitely know, look at your garden and see how much sunlight the area will get that you want to plant in. You should also know whether it stays pretty moist there, the soil, or if it dries out really quickly. And generally, the people at the garden center can help out a little bit when and direct you towards plants that are either for shade or sun and that sort of thing.
And June, you pretty much want to stick to things that are relatively indigenous, if not totally indigenous, to this area.
Well, that's always a good idea. But at the garden center, of course, you're tempted because there's so much to see and so much to decide on. So really, I think that the labeling of plants has come a long way. And it has so much information on the label, if it's a good nursery, that you can look at it and at least look at the hardiness zone and try not to go too far beyond. The nurseries have come a long way, too, and they don't stock a whole lot of plants that don't grow here. But this year, I'd say, was the exception. I don't know that we can even draw a conclusion on how to garden from this year.
What is the hardiness zone?
The hardiness zone is the coldest that it will probably get for that particular climate. We used to be zone 5, which was colder. Now we are said to be in zone 6, which is a bit warmer. This probably was a zone 4 winter, so we're going to just forget about that because you wouldn't grow near as much. It still pays to pay attention to that, though, and not go too far off the mark. But if you do, you know it's a chance you're taking.
With all the discussion that we're hearing these days about climate change, and you're indicating that obviously change is happening here, what are you noticing, Elizabeth, about change here?
Well, after a winter like this, it's kind of funny. You know, you think it's getting warmer and warmer, and then you get a winter that's so cold. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have been trying more and more things that are at different zones, higher zones than we're at, and seeing that they are making it through the cold winters. Of course, this year was the exception.
Right. I want to give our telephone numbers now because we always have a lot of calls when you folks are good enough to join us. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll also take a tweet at STL on air. Going back to the pruning issue, we have Bill calling from Spanish Lake who has what I believe is a pruning question. Let's take his call. Go ahead, Bill.
Hello. I have a 25 or 30-year-old philodendron inside plant that every spring I take and put outside on the deck. This thing is huge. It is root bound. There are two trunks to this plant. Do you think that I can just take a shovel and cut this thing in half like nature might do if it were hit by lightning? Okay. Could I just cut this in half and repot into two smaller containers?
Bill, thank you. He's given us a couple of really dramatic visuals there.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You can do that. I worked in the Climatron for a long time, and you'd be surprised how tropicals respond to our summer weather. It's very tropical, as you must know, here in St. Louis with the hot, humid temperatures. And tropical plants recover quickly if you do your pruning work and dividing work in that period of time. So, yes, do cut that in half and give it two separate pots. It'll do a lot better. But then you're going to have two that get so big.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. You know, we're talking a lot about flowers. A lot of folks, I'm sure, are beginning to think about vegetable gardens. So what should they be thinking? Is it too early to start sticking seeds in the ground, Elizabeth?
No, not at all. I've already got peas and lettuce and
beets
and carrots and radishes going at the garden. It's almost, we're right on the edge of time to start thinking about planting your tomatoes and peppers. It's still a little bit cool. I'd wait a couple weeks, but we're just on the brink of planting those summer vegetables as well.
You say it's still a little bit too cool. How cool is too cool?
At night, it's getting a little cool. You know, we're still, I think we've got one night this week that's getting down to 40 degrees, I think, is the low this week. I like to wait until things are a little bit warmer than that. Our night temperatures are around 50, 55, something like that is ideal.
We're not expecting another frost, likely, although I guess anything's possible.
Yes, it certainly is possible. You know, we do snow removal in the winter, and we're just saying, do not tell us it's going to snow again. We're not hearing it, which it probably won't. It's pretty late for that.
Is it an old wives' tale that your tomatoes should be in the ground before the 7th of May or whatever it is, 10th of May?
I think it's an old wives' tale. I've definitely planted later than that. But that is probably about when I start thinking about putting them in the ground, right about around the 7th.
Then you're pretty much assured that you're going to have the temperatures at night that will accommodate all of that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the phones, and we'll bring in Laura calling from St. Louis. Laura, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I have a wonderful weeping willow tree in my backyard that my yard guys, the guys who mow the lawn, they cut the branches because they were in the way. And now my willow's not weeping anymore. They did this last fall, and so like this year I thought it would come back, but it isn't weeping anymore. And I'm wondering if it will weep again.
It will. It will. Weeping willows have the, you know, their habit is to weep. So any branches, new branches that they put on will also weep. The thing to remember, though, is that I hope you know that weeping willows really love water. And since it was dry last year, make sure that this coming growing season you give it plenty of water. And you'll be rewarded with a lot of new growth, which you'll see come on fairly soon. But it will put on new branches, and they then will weep.
What do you mean? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying thank you. And, yeah, it's in the part of my yard where all the rainwater kind of rushes and pools and floods back there. And so that's mainly one of the reasons why I put it back there.
Good. That's great.
Laura, thanks so much for the call. What do you mean when you talk about a weeping willow weeping?
Oh, the branches cascade down over the trunk, giving it an appearance of weeping.
Which is what they always look like to me.
Right. So when she said it didn't weep, that means they cut them off and it's probably all sticky and sticking out funny. But the new growth will weep down.
Like a bad haircut.
Yes. Sort of like that.
Okay. We have to take a break. We'll do that now and come back and take your horticulture questions. It is that spring planting season, so we want to get on top of it. We have with us from the Missouri Botanical Garden, Elizabeth Spiegel and June Hudson. Back to take your questions in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our discussion about planting flowers and gardens and lawns and all the rest of it during this spring season. We have horticulturists from the Missouri Botanical Garden with us, June Hudson and Elizabeth Spiegel. But before we continue our conversation, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The Illinois Inspector General is looking into state hiring practices in the administration of Governor Pat Quinn. The issue has arisen at an inopportune time for Quinn. He's in a tight gubernatorial race against Republican Bruce Rauner. Mayor Francis Slay and other Mississippi River mayors are expected to make an announcement in St. Louis this afternoon regarding a new program to relieve freight congestion on the river. They say the container on barge program would also create economic opportunities for river ports. And new Missouri men's basketball head coach Kim Anderson was introduced to the media today. Anderson has been coaching at Central Missouri State University and is a former star player and longtime aide to Norm Stewart at Mizzou. You can hear more about these and other stories this afternoon at St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to June Hudson and Elizabeth Spiegel, and we'll take your calls. I just want to bring up the issue of lawn care. Again, referencing the kind of winter that we had, June, anything special we should be thinking about with regard to our lawns?
You know, lawn care is pretty much the same in St. Louis every year, and it's of course, dependent on weather. If it's too cool and you put down certain products, they may not react as much in cool weather, but right now it's perfect lawn weather. The thing you have to remember is to do it early in the year so that your watering of a new lawn is lessened by the temperatures that still will be rather cool. And but, you know, at the garden, we used tall turf fescue for practically all our lawns because it does well in sun or shade. So having said that, it enables it to grow in different temperature regimes as well. So the thing to remember about grass is that you don't want to give it too much nitrogen when you start it, because it will grow like crazy, and then you cut it off, and then it grows like crazy, and you cut it off, and you're on this, you know, treadmill of same activity. So really, you should give it some material that promotes root growth rather than top growth in the springtime.
And Elizabeth, if you have zoysia and it's still brown, don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's it'll come around.
It needs heat and humidity for it to thrive, doesn't it?
Yep.
Let's go back to the phones, and we'll start with Debbie calling from Belleville. Debbie, go ahead.
Hello. I have a question. A few years ago, my daughters gave me a butterfly bush, and I was told never to trim it back. Well, now it is as big as a tree, and it's taken over my garage and everything else. When can I trim the dang thing? It's huge.
Well, is it leafing out at the top? Do you have any green leaves on the top of it?
Yeah.
Oh, you do?
Green. Yeah, some of it's green.
Okay, well, then you can cut it back, because a lot of our buddleias haven't even come out yet, and we fear all the top growth is dead, and we're going to have to start over with it at the ground level. But if yours is leafing out at the top, you're in good shape. But now would be the right time to prune it back, and you can prune it back hard. You know how
it'll still come out for the rest of the year.
Oh yeah, it likes to be pruned back in a normal year, and unfortunately, I think nature did it for us this year with a lot of our buddleias.
Okay, well, good, because it gets so many butterflies, so I never wanted to kill it. But oh my gosh, it's amazing.
Well, good for you. It sounds lovely.
Okay, thank you.
Debbie, good luck. Thanks for calling. Let's bring in Jenny calling from Frontenac. Jenny, go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling about knockout roses. I planted some 3, possibly 4 years ago, and I kind of pruned them a little bit gently this year. They're already leafing out. Now when I drive around town, I notice that they're all just so drastically pruned down to, you know, like a foot from the ground. So if they're leafing out, is it too late to prune them drastically again?
Okay, you don't really need to prune them that drastically. I suspect the reason that you're seeing the ones that are drastically pruned is because everything above that cut was dead. So, you know, again, this is a different kind of year. But if yours are leafing out, you know, if you just cut them about 3 foot from the ground, they'll have a lot of room to grow and put on a lot of new growth and a lot of flower buds. You don't really have to go any further than that.
Okay. And I don't know if you have time to answer a question about zucchini or cucumbers and squash in general, but the easiest thing to grow, and I can never grow it, it will, if I get it started, it will produce flowers and sometimes fruit, and then all of a sudden, it'll just completely die.
Oh, it's one of two things. We have a squash vine borer here that will, they lay eggs on the zucchinis or your squash plants, and then the bugs actually hatch inside, and they'll kind of, it'll look like the base of the plant pretty much just rotted out.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
And it's a really hard bug to deal with. I deal with it at the gardens as well. And, you know, that's one of the ones that, I mean, I've heard that people inject their plants with Bacillus thuringiensis, BT, which is a herbicide or a pesticide you can buy. But I've also heard people covering up their stems with aluminum foil. But I've also heard that some of these things are hard to do or don't work that well. If you grow a winter squash, which is a vining squash, you can cover the stem with soil in multiple places, and it'll promote more root growth in places where the plant can actually get nutrients from the soil. So that can help and prolong the life of the plant, but it's something that I think everyone here in St. Louis deals with.
So it's not a location problem?
Unfortunately, the vine borer is a moth, and it's adult stage. So it can fly around pretty much anywhere and get you.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Speaking of things flying around, we have a call from Dana, who may also have emailed us. Let's bring her into the discussion. Dana, did you send an email as well?
Did you send an email as well? I certainly did.
Okay, well, go ahead.
I had a question for Miss Elizabeth regarding bee swarms. I have a swarm here at the garden, in my garden, and I was wondering what steps should I take to try to capture this hive?
Oh, man, that's exciting. So if you can actually get to the swarm, do you know where is it?
It's in the apple tree.
Okay, so if you can actually reach that limb, you can, if you have a hive, a place to put it, you can reach that limb and cut it down and just try and knock all the bees into that hive. If you can catch the queen, then you'll most likely keep that hive.
How long will that hive hang in that tree?
Oh, they'll hang in there until they find another suitable location for a home. So, and then they'll fly off and make their home wherever that is.
Well, they're swarming now, so where should I get a beehive?
There are a couple places. There's a place that called...
Hives R Us.
Isabees in South City.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for that information.
You're welcome.
Dana, thank you for the call. I should point out that, Elizabeth, you're the chief beekeeper at the garden.
I am.
As you were last year when we were the last time that we talked. I have a quick question about that. The colony collapse problem, has that changed at all? Do we have any answers?
I don't know that we've had any answers. I think most people are saying that it's a combination of factors that is really affecting the colonies right now. But I've heard that a lot of beekeepers had a tough winter, and I think it's just the same as the flowers and things out there. Everything got a little colder than normal, so it just makes things hard.
And June, this whole notion of the colony collapse and the elimination of bees or the reduction in numbers is really a critical element, isn't it, in our whole environment?
It really is. That's why we encourage people to try to attract native bees. You know, the honeybee is not native, and we still love them and we want them because the orchard people need mass pollination, and if they're not around, that can be a real problem for their crop. But there are other bees that pollinate plants, so we try to attract mason bees, which are native, and they're bigger. They're like little small bumblebees, actually, and we haven't been real successful. At least we don't see them very much, but it always helps to have the native insects along with the, you know, the introduced ones. So we have both.
Sure. Elizabeth, a lot of study going on to try to figure this out.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah. It's an important issue, no doubt. Let's go back to the phones and bring in Gigi calling from Clayton. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question. Need some advice on what I would use for a hedge or a fence. Out of three choices I got in a mail order catalog, the first is roses, and presumably they'd grow up to 6 feet tall, Rose of Sharon or Purple Leaf Plum. For our area and for the lowest maintenance, which would be the best choice? I do not want an all-green.
Okay, I think roses are out. If you don't want maintenance, that's probably the wrong choice because you're going to ultimately have to deal with the inherent problems that roses get in our climate. So I would definitely stay away from that. The purple leaf plum is nice. It's really, really, really low maintenance, and you have the dark purple leaves most of the season, so that's good. If you go with the Rose of Sharon, which are really, really beautiful, what you want to do is ask your nurserymen to show you the sterile hybrids. That means they won't drop seeds all over your yard and your neighbor's yard, and that certainly isn't low maintenance. So ask them to help you select one that doesn't seed, and then you'll be really happy with that one.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the call, Gigi. Dan joins us now from Fenton. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, my backyard is heavily shaded, and I've been trying to grow lawn there for quite some time. But more importantly, I have an erosion issue because when the water comes in, I'm on an incline, and pretty much everything washes away. I can keep lawn on it to try to keep some of the topsoil, but it washes away quite a bit of my lawn. And just wondering if you can give me some ideas to try to keep the, you know, keep the soil and keep the topsoil there.
A rain garden is always a great option. There are a lot of plants that will root even in those wet conditions. Juncus is a good example.
Right.
Yeah. But there's a lot of materials on rain gardens. There's a lot of places you can look.
Yeah, we have information on our website about that. And you don't have to make a big deal out of it. It's really it's water containment and planting plants within that containment that can stand periodic inundation of water. And then when it dries up, they don't mind that either. But you have to confine the water in some way, either with a stone edge or whatever, halfway down the slope or at the top, whatever. But that's a good conservation thing to do as well, because you keep your rain out of the sewer system that way.
Is this something that most of us could do on our own? I mean, obviously,
yes.
You know, you don't need a garden architect or somebody like that to figure it out.
No, I mean, that's a lovely thing to do if that's within your, you know, wherewithal to do. But actually, if you just read the concept of it, I dug one, and if I can do it, anybody can, you know.
And information on your website.
Yes,
and of course, we'll have a link to that website on ours at STLPublicRadio.org. Let's bring in David calling from St. Louis. David, go ahead.
Hi. I have a nectarine tree I planted about 5 years ago, and I always get tons of fruit. I mean, so much that the boughs kind of bend down, but they only get to be about as big as a plum, hard, and they never seem to mature from there. And I was wondering if there's something I can do now or something I need to do to get that fruit to mature.
You can definitely try thinning the fruit. That'll help with the production of the fruit. So the idea is that you want less fruit on your tree. It always helps to prune, but I'd usually prune in the wintertime before it starts putting on flowers and fruit. But at this point, you can kind of see where those fruits are coming on and literally just pick off the just leave one or two on each branch and see how that does.
Okay. Thank you much.
Thank you for calling. We have an email here from Chris who writes, I planted several azaleas last year, my first time trying that particular plant. Before winter, I cut them back. So far, only one of the five bushes shows any life. Should they be blooming yet? Did I go wrong by pruning them before the very hard winter? They're in an area that bears the brunt of north winter winds. Any suggestions for reviving them, or are they goners?
Well, you could pray, but I don't know in this case if that's really going to work either. Actually, no, you never prune azaleas in the winter. If you're going to prune them at all, you do it right after they bloom, because they set their buds on old wood. So you're probably not going to have many flowers this year. So just remember next year or next fall, don't touch them. And also, this winter has been really hard on azaleas, even if you didn't prune them. So keep watching them and see if you get new growth either on the old stems that were cut back or at the base of the azalea, and let those things grow at the base, and that might regenerate your plant in that manner. But don't prune them till after they bloom.
A couple of azalea questions here. Brian writes, my azaleas are dying. What can I do? Only 10% are blooming, the rest just barely budding to leaf. I think the cat is relieving itself under some of the bushes. Oh, no.
Well, that would certainly do that, wouldn't it? That might be a problem that we don't know how to answer. But yeah, some of our azaleas look terrific, and some look very compromised by the weather. So I'd say wait. Just wait and see what happens for a while. You can always prune more off if it's dead.
All right. Brian has a couple of questions here. When should I plant flowers? What phase of the moon? Waxing, right? When is that from now?
Oh, gosh.
I think Brian is just starting.
Yeah, well, you know, we don't pay too much attention to that. And I think, technical information tells us that that's not really, the only time you can plant. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. And when you say flowers, annuals should wait a little bit, summer annuals, till it warms up a bit more. But it is the time to plant perennials to get them started.
All right.
So you have to know which is which, I guess.
And finally from Brian, my hollyhocks had the rust virus last year. What can I do this year? I was advised to cut them all down and removed all the stalks.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You really can look in the catalogs and buy rust-resistant varieties. That's to how to get around the rust on the hollyhocks. Once they have it, really, the things that you'd have to spray wouldn't be worth it to bring them back. They're never going to look the same. But the new varieties out on the market really they're working on eliminating the susceptibility to that rust disease on the hollyhocks. So look for those in your garden center.
All righty. Well, we're talking gardens today on St. Louis on the Air. My guests in studio, June Hudson and Elizabeth Spiegel, both from the Missouri Botanical Garden. They know, obviously, everything there is to know about things that grow in the ground. we'll be ready to take more of your questions in just a moment. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org if you'd prefer to do it that way. Or if you'd like to send a tweet, do so at STL on Air. Back with Elizabeth and June in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation with two horticulturalists from the Missouri Botanical Garden, June Hudson and Elizabeth Spiegel. We have lots of calls and lots of questions, so let's get right to it. We'll pick it up with Art calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Art.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call there, Don. In plant propagation, they have what they call division. I divided a shrub, very expensive, of Japanese autumn olive. The donor plant seems to have affected some kind of a trauma. I think maybe I took too much of the roots away because the plant, portion of the plant that I transplanted has leafed out and is starting to blossom. Just how long should I wait for the donor plant to go ahead and swell up the buds. There is some degree of green underneath the bark. Shall I wait 2 years or 3 years? How long shall I wait before I call the case terminal?
Well, I would say that as long as there's green on the plant, it's still alive. And the depletion of the rootstock definitely makes the plant makes it harder for the plant to uptake water. So make sure that, that it's staying wet around the area, damp, but not too wet. And that'll definitely help it along. As long as you can still see green on the trunk when you scratch it, the plant is still alive, so it may pull out of it.
Thanks, Art, and keep the cat away from it. we've already learned that that's not a good thing to put near the plants. Thank you so much. Let's go to Ryan calling from St. Peter's. Ryan, go ahead.
Hi. I have Birds of Paradise. It's about 7.5 feet tall. Kept it inside all winter, and now it has black leaves on a couple of leaves. Anything I can do to fix that?
Well, it's hard to diagnose things like that without actually seeing it, but I would cut off the black leaves and eliminate any spores that might be lingering on the two leaves. Although usually anything, disease like that doesn't turn the leaves black. So I'm a little, it was in front of a vent from the furnace or something like that?
That's about 7 feet away from one.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I do is cut them off and keep observing the plant. And if it doesn't get any more black leaves, you're probably just fine. If it does, why don't you bring one in to our plant doctor at the Kemper Center so we can take a look at it?
Great. Also, when can I take that back outside?
Ooh, it's a little cool still. You better wait till the nights are in the 50s, at least the low to mid-50s.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for the call. We'll go back to the phone in a moment. We have a couple of emails here. Charmaine asks, do you know a treatment for lawn grubs that is safe for dogs?
Oh, gosh. Tell her to look up milky spore disease, and it will give you certain remedies for that, and that should take care of them because the grubs are susceptible to that. I'm not sure about its organic quality, but it's a very old remedy, and I think it probably is okay, but I don't want to mislead the person. Just tell them to look up milky spore disease or milky spore treatment, and it'll tell you whether it's safe for animals.
All right, from milky spore to milkweed. Susie emails, where can you get milkweed to attract butterflies?
There's a great spot. Missouri Wildflower is a good spot. You can get them. We also have a plant sale down at the Nature Reserve. I'm not sure of the date on that, but
I think it's first part of May.
Yeah, and they'll have it down there as well.
Yes, they will.
Okay, and of course we're thinking about the monarch butterflies there. They're really dependent on that, and that population is diminishing too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Good question. Thanks for that. Let's go to Sandra in New City. Sandra, go ahead.
Yes, I have 4-foot by 4-foot raised garden beds for vegetables, and I'm wondering what is the best way to keep rabbits and squirrels out of the vegetables?
Oh, good question. That's a stumper. Everyone deals with that.
Yeah.
Rabbits, definitely you can put a fence around as long as you make sure the fence is, you know, at the ground level or maybe even a little below. To about knee height or a little bit above, you shouldn't have a problem with rabbits getting in there. Squirrels, on the other hand, are a little bit more difficult. I always tell people to convince their neighbors to plant vegetables so that the squirrels just have more to choose from. But you can also make a spray with like cayenne pepper, Tabasco, anything really spicy, and soapy water and garlic. That can help keep them off. There's also a couple sprays you can buy if you don't want to make something up that you spray on there to keep off wildlife.
Or this might be the occasion where you might want a cat.
Yeah. You're right.
Oh, it's so confusing. It's so confusing. That answer all of your question?
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, like, could I put stakes up at the...
Whoops.
I think we lost.
Yeah, it seems we lost her. I think put stakes up. I guess she's talking about some sort of a...
You can put a netting around the plant, yeah. Definitely, but you'll want to make sure it's taller than the plant that you're growing.
All righty. Monsi is joining us now. I'm not sure where Monsi is calling from, but go ahead with your question.
Oh, hi. Thank you. So I just planted some strawberries and tomatoes, peppers, and pots, but I wasn't sure if I should still keep them outside or bring it in because it may drop to 40s at night.
The strawberries will be fine. Peppers and tomatoes, they can get stunted a little bit when it gets cool. They'll definitely still produce, but they may slow down. So, you know, that's my tip for you.
Okay, so it's okay if I just still leave it out for a bit?
You can leave it out, but they might slow down on growth.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
We have an email from Martha. My 12-year-old magnolia tree looks horrible. It's about 80% brown leaves. Will it survive? Anything I should do?
I'm pretty sure she's probably referring to Magnolia grandiflora, the southern magnolia, because they look terrible. And my neighbor has one, and I can hear the leaves falling from my house. So what you want to do is just leave it alone and let all those brown leaves fall off and hope that there's green stems that will produce new leaves. You'll know shortly because they're really falling fast, whereas for winter they were just hanging on and they're all brown. So just keep observing it, and hopefully, you know, once those brown leaves are off, you'll see little green ones coming out where the brown ones were. You're going to have to cut it back.
Hope that answers the question. Becky in Gillespie, Illinois writes, I heard the previous question regarding the nectarine trees. I'm wondering if I am too late to prune my parent apple trees. They are fruit-bearing, not ornamental.
I usually do my pruning when they're dormant, but you can still prune at this time. You may be knocking off some fruit and that sort of thing, but you won't do any serious damage.
Okay, to Karen now in Edwardsville. She's on the phone. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi, thank you so much. My family and I have been gardening for a long time, and we do our own compost, and we try to do organic as much as possible. About 5 years ago, I decided it would be the greatest idea ever for my children to plant some birdhouse gourds in a little pot on the side of our house. And, you know, we did, and it took over the entire side, and we had 40 gourds come out, and I thought it was great. Although I started to see cucumber beetles on those plants. And ever since then, you know, I've been killing them when I see them smushed, putting them in soapy water, whatever, like I do with the Japanese beetles. But ever since then, I have been unable to grow cucumbers. So I'm assuming from my little bit of research that maybe it's the cucumber mosaic virus in the soil. I didn't have the gourds anywhere near my vegetable garden. Any advice would be just greatly appreciated, or should I just give up on anything melon or cucumber?
Well, yeah, cucumber beetles are a hard thing to battle, and I definitely deal with them as well. So the cucumber beetle also transmits a bacterial wilt when it eats the cucumber plant. So if it has that bacterial wilt, the leaves will start wilting. And is that what you're getting?
I do. Yeah, the leaves, sometimes they'll be cucumbers. It'll be fine for a while. I'll have cucumbers and no leaves.
Yeah, so prior to the flowering, you can definitely protect your cucumber plants with a row cover. And then they just came out with a new variety called Cross Country that doesn't need to be insect pollinated, and you can grow it under a row cover the whole time, so that would be an option for you.
Is row cover something you can get for a small garden?
Yeah,
I've seen them in the farm supplies.
But. Yeah, it's also called Remay. A lot of people use it to protect from frost, but you can also use it to protect from insects. And I also do, sometimes I'll use the Remay to cover it, and then, you know, sooner or later the cucumber beetles will get the cucumbers, so I'll start another batch of cucumbers inside when I see that first batch going down. And then at least you can get maybe two crops of cucumbers off of your plants.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. An email from Dan. Could you speak to using sedge as a ground cover in shade areas as an alternative to grass?
Absolutely. That's a great idea. The thing to look at, though, is that there are sedges that like wet soil, and there's some that like dry, some like shade, and some like sun. So make sure you pick the ones that are suitable for your conditions, and sedge is a perfect way to substitute or to use as a ground cover instead of grass.
To Robert in Richmond Heights on the phone. Go ahead, Robert.
Morning. Last summer, our peonies developed what I was told was powdery mildew later in the summer, and they looked awful, like bodies had been dragged through them. And I was told at the time that spraying them early this summer would help prevent that from recurring. I have something called a copper mildew spray. I don't know if that's the right thing, and I was wondering when to do it.
Well, you know, a lot of these sprays have a very short life where they are effective. So you almost have to, like, time it to when you remember them getting the mildew in previous years, so that the fungal material has to be present for the spray to work, unless you get...
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, read on the label. If it says systemic, that means that the plant takes it up in its root system and it protects it longer, but it's unlikely it says that for powdery mildew. And, you know, if it gets really ugly and your flowers are gone and you're not collecting the seed, just cut all those leaves off for the season. And you don't compost peony leaves. You have to remove them.
No, I threw them away last year.
That's a good thing. Yeah. So if it gets really bad, just cut them off and get rid of the material that way.
Okay.
Robert, thank you. Thank you for the call, Robert. Let's bring in Joyce calling from South County. Go ahead, Joyce.
I have a crepe myrtle tree that's about 35 years old, and it shows absolutely no sign of coming out.
Yeah, it's a really bad problem this year. You know, we've become complacent in planting things that normally won't grow here, and now we're getting our hands slapped. Look around the base of the bark or of the trunk, even though it's probably big, and you should see regrowth at that level. You may have to cut down all the old wood just to get that new growth at the base to break out.
Also, last year my phlox were attacked by this bug, this little beetle, and it also attacked the daylilies, which normally aren't attacked by anything.
Yeah, that's the phlox bug. That's a little devil, and he can see you before you see him, and he tries to hide from you. It's very interesting lifestyle. But our first attack, firstly, you know, observation. It seems as though you're doing that. Second is hit them with a hard stream of water as hard as you can, and you'll knock them off. That you're going to have to keep up with that. A lot of the material that you can use on the phlox bug we found is toxic to bees, and we're no longer doing that. So we're trying to do it very organically and just hit them with water and keep them off the phlox.
They just fly away and come back.
Well, no, you'll do some of them in. It's a very arduous way to do it, but it's better than putting material on that's harmful to other insects or animals.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. Elizabeth, we had a caller who couldn't stay, was wondering what they can do to attract bees. What can they put around?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Composite flowers, like your asters. They really like purple and yellow is what we found. Yarrow and dill are great attractors for honeybees.
All righty. And again, we need them. We need them. Let's go to Liz in Webster Groves. Go ahead, Liz. Liz, are you with us?
I'm sorry. Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
I have a problem the last couple years with voles, not moles, but voles, really decimating the flowers. I wonder if you had any suggestions.
That's a tough one. You know, if you don't have cats that are more, roaming in the garden, there are certain products that will get rid of them. But I have voles, too, and I use a product called Mole Max. And it's actually Mole Max, and it contains castor bean, and they're repelled by that.
Uh-huh.
So if I find the vole holes, I put some of that down there, and it seems to keep them at bay. It's not a cure. It's just to help. There are certain exterminators, if it gets to be critical, that will come to your yard, and they'll put bombs down all the holes and smoke them out. But short of that, you're really stuck with, a lot of people say set a mouse trap with peanut butter. Well, I'd have to have 4,000 mouse traps. So that's not a real practical answer for you.
Right. I worry about the birds getting it or something.
Well, yeah, and that is the situation. But if you put this Mole Max down their holes, the birds aren't going to go down the hole to get it.
Right.
And then the voles will move out, hopefully.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. We have a call I'm not going to take because of time consideration. What about slugs? What do we do about slugs in the garden?
Well, there's a lot of organic ways you can control them. Sweet gum balls are good. Anything that has rough edges.
Sweet gum balls are good for something.
Balls, yeah.
Finally.
Put them under your hostas or wherever because when the slugs go crawl over them, it hurts their tummy. So they'll quit doing that. There are other slug products that work as well. So Sluggo Plus, that's the one we like. Yeah, I was trying to think of the name of it. Sluggo Plus, that's a really good product for slugs.
Boy, this time is moving quickly. We have a tweet from Robert. A tweet, I recently moved from Florida and I'm accustomed to St. Augustine grass and weeds. What do I do for zoysia and all those unknown weeds?
Does he want to kill it? Or I'm sorry.
I guess I'm gathering that's the case. I'm accustomed to the weeds, and I guess in how to deal with them. What do I do for the weeds in zoysia?
Well, broadleaf weed killer does only the broadleaf weeds. It doesn't hurt the grass. So you have to pick a remedy that will help you with a problem that's specific to your problem. What it means is you go to the garden center and start reading the bags and make sure that that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, it's a specific type of weed that's got broad leaves, and there's specific herbicides for those things. So it won't hurt the grass in that case.
Here's a question. Let's see if we can answer it in 30 seconds from Janelle. I have a large six-foot rhododendron that's very spindly. It was crowded by a holly tree, which we removed. How and when do I prune it to encourage filling out?
Well, what you do is you wait till after it blooms, and you can cut on rhododendrons and azaleas pretty heavily to thicken them up and that would be the exact right time, but it's also the right time to fertilize them. So go to your garden center and get a fertilizer that is good for acidic plants. It'll say rhododendrons, azaleas, gardenias, and use that, and it'll help them grow.
You've got a hotline. Quickly, your hotline number, and we'll put it on our website.
Our hotline number, 577-5143.
All righty. June Hudson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
Elizabeth
you.
Spiegel, a lot of questions. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all the calls and emails, but contact the garden. They'll answer all your questions. Thank you both for being with
Thanks
us.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about what's going on in the Missouri legislature with less than a month to go before adjournment. And what's going on with car services like Lyft and Uber in St. Louis? Should they be allowed? Plus a conversation with historian Doris Kearns Goodwin in advance of our visit to St. Louis early next month. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.